Okay. Good morning, everybody. My name is Kendall, and I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. Just before we get started, I'd like to take a second, center myself into a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay. So glad to be here today and to give service. Thank you for being asked to speak. I find that when I share my experience, strength, and hope, it really helps my recovery a lot to carry the message. And it's also a reminder for myself that all I had to be was willing to do this stuff, to be honest, to be open-minded and willing to do it. And my higher power, whom I call God, took care of the rest of what was necessary and what's been necessary for me, and that's really been it's been important. So it's a gratitude to the program, it's a gratitude to God to be here today. Just a bit of my, just to get some of the qualification stuff out of the way. On the 4th, so Monday, made 2 years and 6 months of abstinence for me, and I'm grateful. The 4th is also my weigh-in day, and I'm down 154 pounds. I'm a little bit past my halfway mark. I'm definitely a multiple hundred pounder. And so in the ways that many people in this program qualify, I'm going to do my best to talk about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, and what life is like now. And also the last caveat I will give is that, your mileage may vary. I'm doing do the best of my experience to share my experience with the steps. And I find that when I share in I, me, and my language, that people connect to it sometimes. But I find that if I talk about my experience honestly, that's the best that I can do to help. I think that's what carries the message. It's not my opinion. It's my experience of the steps and not necessarily my opinion. It's what I've tried and what's working for me. Okay, so what was I like? Very briefly, I don't want to stay in the mess. I want to get into the message, but it is really important. There are a few things that I have to name. One, as a kid, I grew up in a household where I felt like my feelings weren't safe. So the first thing I really learned how to do was lie. I learned how to lie about things being fine. I learned how to lie about whatever I was thinking. And I found that food helped me lie. While yes, I was always attracted to eating any sugar item, sugar, flour, all there are many things I'll get into in a second there, but I found that when I would eat the food, people could tell me anything, people could say anything could be happening in the house, and I could always say I'm fine. So, I learned how to lie before I really learned that I was a compulsive overeater. Then secondly, with the food, there were certain foods that when they went into my body, and I always knew, sort of at a deep level, that when I ate them, it was off to the races. Even as a child, I remember getting up on top of a chair and grabbing all the cookies out of the cupboard, taking them up in my room, and then, I had the wrappers and all the stuff was on my bed, but I fell asleep because I was probably, in sugar-induced sleep. I would wake up, and if I was at my mom's house or if I was at my dad's house, I would say, when particularly I was at my dad's house, my dad would he'd be upset with me about the food, I would feel shame about it. But the apology from my parents, either of them, and family members, when I would eat too much, I would isolate, and then they would feel bad. But then I always got more food. Food was the apology as well. So, because food was the apology, I learned that if I could just make it through the shame, I could get more food. So my disease just kept building it, and so I would hide and eat. Now, this disease, as I understand it, is not as a compulsive overeater. It is not just an issue of the body; it's an issue of the mind, which makes it a spiritual malady. So, part of my story is also talking about, some of the glaring character defects that would come out when I would eat these foods. For one of them, because I was so, fear was such a big part of my life. By this point, I guess it's also important to say I've never been at a normal body weight. I was a large baby. I was a large kid my entire life and still am. But part of my story is that I've always been very overweight. And so I developed this character, somewhere early in my life. I thought to be safe and protected in this world, that if I was going to be a fat guy, that I had to be smart, funny, rich, powerful, any of those things. So a lot of what happened in my life was about trying to use what God gave me as my creative mind, but also trying to use my intelligence. And I would try to use those things to wield power over people. I tried to use wit and charisma, and sarcasm, self-deprecating humor, to try to draw attention away from my weight. And I would try to draw in people that were would have, I was teased a lot. So, people talk about fighting, flight, freeze. There's a fourth called fawning. When I was attacked as a kid, and when I was, when I dealt with that psychological and sometimes physical abuse as a kid, I tried to make those people my friends, but I didn't really have them as my friends. I talked about them behind their backs. I was a gossiper. I lied about people. I was also the first person very often to try to character assassinate. I would let people know that when I was on jobs, particularly in one of my fields as a musician, I would be letting people know who screwed up on what gig before or what was happening on other contracts or these things. I wanted to be the person that was the center of all of the knowledge because I thought that that's what gave me power. But it really just put me on top of the pile of crap that I was making in my life. I was also very manipulative, but I thought in a way that was proper. I would have called myself a people pleaser, which through recovery, I now no longer call myself a people pleaser. I call myself a kind manipulator. All of my relationships were transactional. I thought that if I did something for people, that they had to do something back for me. And that was the only way that I could exchange validation or love. If people could help me, if people helped me, or if I helped them, they would help me later. I could, they would owe me one. And I always wanted people to owe me one. So I was constantly overperforming because I thought if I did more, I was worth more. One line, particularly in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, not very long, but one line is it's on page 2 of Bill's story. And it just says, I'd prove to the world I was important. I had this chip on my shoulder that I was going to prove what was going to happen. That I, you know, that that's how I was going to live my life. And so, to fast forward through all of that story, I've got these glaring character defects that are developing, that are really pronounced because I'm compulsively eating through every relationship that I've ever been in, with particularly in romantic ones. When I ate, I never really experienced a low from the relationship itself because I just started eating, so I would numb my feelings. And through a series of events in my life, I made it up to over 460 pounds. I was 464 pounds in 2018, and my body started to tap me out. I went into diabetic ketoacidosis, so my blood sugar was over 500. My A1C was 12.6 or something like that when I went into the emergency room, and I had to stay there for almost 2 days. And there was a doctor there who said, like if we see you here again, it's likely, you're likely going to die, because my body was shutting down. And I very nicely said, to myself in my head, I'm, giving this guy the middle finger. But what really came out was, okay, no, thanks for letting me know. And I continued to compulsively eat for another 2 years after that. And that's all without mentioning the fact that, number one, I had tried in my entire life every single diet that had ever come. I tried ones where you took injections and then ate super low calorie. I tried ones where you restricted specific foods. I tried intermittent fasting. I tried all of the things. I tried switching out the types of my alcoholic foods, which was sugar, right? I tried the substitute sugars, but I would eat substitute sugar packets and mix them in water. I would drink liters of diet sodas. There were a lot of problems. And so what I would say in terms of the most important thing for me in my step one, which I'll get into in a second here, is it wasn't just about what the food item was, it was about the volume. I just wanted more of everything. So I'm a volume eater. And so again, after going through all of this stuff in my life. I dropped some weight after getting the diagnosis from the doctors as being a type 2 diabetic. I fight for another 2 years of binging and some restricting, but not very successfully restricting at all. I always put more weight on with interest. And so, as a result, thank you for the time, Jack. Got the 10 minutes. As a result of that up and down yo-yoing, I regained all the weight, plus some. So I know I was north of 464 pounds. That was just the last time that was recorded at a doctor's office, so that I decided to write it down. That was the last one I saw, but I was certain that I was bigger than that. And for some reason, unbeknownst to me, which I know was God poking, there were a couple of folks that had told me years ago about OA, a friend of mine who was in a sister fellowship around drugs had said, told me once, man, you talk about food, how I talked about these drugs. And I ignored him. I had another friend very close to me who's a dear friend, and she is a member of the mothership program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she told me, there's OA if you're ever interested in finding out more information about it. And so those were very light 12-step experiences for me, but those people I wrote off as soon as they told me about this thing with the disease, I pushed them out of my life. And so, because, how dare you? I know everything. I knew everything about diets. I know exactly what I need to do was something I kept saying, and how come I can't do it? And I felt powerless. And that's what brought me into the rooms of OA. I found during the pandemic, I was just eating to die. Because I was alone with all the foods. I didn't even have to get out of the car because they were delivering the food to the house and they would put the groceries in the back of the car and I just kept eating. I thought about the bariatric surgery, but they told me I had to lose a bunch of weight before I could do it. And my insurance wasn't going to pay enough of it and yada, yada, yada. I thought I was just going to die. So I just ate like I was going to die. November 11th, 2020 was my first OA meeting. And that's where the miracles started to happen for me. Was admitting the powerlessness. I went to a 100-pounder meeting and I heard a woman share my story out of her mouth, and that was it. That was my step one. I admitted I was powerless over food. My life could become was unmanageable. I couldn't do it by myself. I knew right then when I entered the rooms. I also, for some reason unbeknownst to me, immediately relinquished most of my alcoholic foods, which are it's the substances. I don't eat sugar or sugar substitutes. I don't eat flour or flour substitutes. I don't eat dairy, nuts, and I also weigh and measure my food because I'm a volume eater. As soon as I'm disturbed, I have overeaten abstinent foods. I have overeaten, apples, spinach. It doesn't really matter. If I can just push food in, it pushes me away from my higher power. And I needed to get clear on that. And so my sponsor, who I am eternally grateful for, encouraged me to get a nutritionist, so I did, because that's what he does, and he's sponsored. And I got a nutritionist. We worked on the steps, and in working the steps, I'm fired from food. It's no longer a thing that I decide by myself. That's it. I'm the lawyer. My nutritionist and my sponsor and other fellows in this program are the judge. I ask people what they do, and I do what they do. And it's really been working for me. So in that, in step two, coming to believe in a power greater than myself, it's really that this program is a spiritual program. I knew a lot about what I thought about God before I came into this program, but this program is a program of action. And I found that when I told other people that I wanted to eat, I don't understand it. Every time I told someone I wanted to eat, when I got on the phone, I didn't eat. Every time I went to a meeting and shared something that was going on in my life and that what I was afraid of, that thing just didn't happen the way that was in my head. My life got better and I couldn't understand it. I thought I understood everything about God, particularly the God of my childhood, whom I had prayed to remove the gluttony from me and to make me clean. And what I learned was that what I do is what I really believe. What I do in connection to others is what I believe in life. And so I slowly started to see that God could help me with this compulsive eating. I took the step three, and step three, when I offered myself over to God to do with me as God would do with me, that was my agreement to start working steps 4 through 9. And in working steps 4 through 9, that was my access to power. Thank you for the, I see the 5 minutes, Jack. Thank you so much. Once I got access to step, once I was given that ability to do the searching, fearless moral inventory, what was really important was writing down writing things down in the columns. And what I found was when I started finding all those glaring character defects that I was talking about, and it was a result of me having expectations about people, about places, things, inserting myself into situations where I did not need to be because I was afraid of what people would think. So pride was at the top of the list. So many things, pride, vanity, so many things were at the top of the list because I was afraid of what people would say about me or what they were thinking about me. And when I finally gave those things over to my sponsor in my step 5, that's where I had my spiritual experience and truly understood God was real. I really had the feeling that God was real because I had not known that I was really living my life as an agnostic. I thought I believed in God, but I was not walking with God. And that's what happened for me. It changed the trajectory of my entire career. It changed everything in my life when I had that spiritual experience. It was unshakable. And the food thoughts, at some point, I guess it's also important to name that before working my step 5, at some point on an outreach call with someone who had many years of abstinence, I was just rattling off all this stuff that was going on in my life. And he interrupted me while I was complaining about everything. He said, "When is the last time you thought about eating?" And I could have just cried right then because I did not realize that I had not thought about eating in months. I was just taking all of these actions. I did not understand what was really happening for me. What I would say is that in terms of the tools, the phone is the most important one for me to this day. If I share it, I don't eat it. It is very simple for me. If I share what's going on in real time, I don't eat. So in step 6 and 7, outlining my character defects, particularly in the step 7 prayer, one thing I want to share is that it was very important for me to the particular line, right? So my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. And you know, I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Meaning my character defects, I don't know which ones God is going to take away from me. And I also don't know if God's using one of my character defects as an asset, right? So I don't know how I'm going to be used. And being humble enough and being humble is not being humiliated. Understanding that it's getting me right-sized with the rest of the world. I think of the steps as not walking up to God. I think about it as walking down from my high horse, walking down from the hill where I act like I'm above everybody and I get to be with everyone. In steps 8 and 9, when I made amends for my fear, what I found in 4 and 5 as well, was the things that had been done to me, I had done to others. I had abandoned relationships. I had lied to people. I had stolen money. I had character assassinated. And I had to make sure, I had to make those things right. And I found that some people had grace for me that I had no idea had already forgiven me. There were people that had forgotten. And I realized that I was the one carrying all of this stuff around. And to put that down was another spiritual experience. And I do see my time, Jack, for my last minute. I do see the time. Thank you so much for your service. You know, and so in doing the steps 8 and 9 is where I started to see the promises come true, particularly, you know, seeing that no matter how far down the scale I had gone, so no matter how bad it had gotten in my recovery, no matter how bad things had gotten before I came into the rooms, my experience has been useful to others. But having access to power in steps 10, 11, and 12, in 10, where I get to keep clearing the wreckage, the 10th step is very important for me every day. Very simply, it is done in real time. On page 84, it is really important to keep this step simple for me. So I watch for the selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear in real time, like right now. When they crop up, I ask God to take it away, to remove it. Then I talk to someone and make it amends quickly if I have offended anybody or harmed anyone. And then I turn to helping others. So that's to clear the area. I seek God in my prayer and meditation time every morning, and read on Awakening 86 to 88 every day. And finally, the service. I get to carry the message like I get to do right now. And thank you so much for the opportunity to share. And with that, I will pass. Thanks for the opportunity to do a lead here today.